The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast. It's Monday, the 13th of May, 2019. On the podcast today, I have David Ciclatera, Executive Chairman of Live Company Group, LVCG, ticker there. And David discusses their multi-year agreement with Exhibition Hub to promote, manage, and operate Brick Live shows in Belgium. Also on the podcast, David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil. And David, on the release of their final results, discusses their operational highlights and what's to come. Also, Malky, oil and gas sector specialist, talks about the following companies: Hurricane Energy, Chariot Oil and Gas, Victoria Oil and Gas, and Rock Rose Energy. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, and you can see lots of other content there, interviews and articles about Metro Bank and SP Angels Morning View, fresh US tariffs, Sting Metals across the board. Plus, do me a favour. If you get any value at all, if you've used the app, the Vox Markets app, and you haven't given us a review, please could you do so? Because it does help when people search for investment apps. Ours will pop up into the top five sort of most searched, and it'll help us a lot with downloads, and we can improve that app off more feedback. So if you're on the Apple Store or on the Android Store, just go in there, spend 5 minutes, give us a decent review and five stars if you could, and that would be muchos apreciados.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Ciclatera, Executive Chairman at Live Company Group. David, thanks for joining me.
Good morning to you.
Now, you're always busy, and you're releasing new shows all the time, and we're going to release a new one. This show is in Brussels, which you've been to before, David, haven't you?
Yeah, with the same promoter. It was one of the first international shows we did. I think we did it in the end of 2017, and actually did rather well for the guy, and we're so pleased he's back with us. And he's doing we've committed to a 3-year contract. It's in the holiday period in October, which is obviously a good period in Belgium for the holiday period for kids. He, as I said, he did well last time. He actually made a 6-figure profit from working with us. And so, that's good to see your promoter doing well. The license fee we get is very substantial, and we're very happy to be back in business with him.
Yeah, and I suppose worth pointing out, it's not just a one-off show, is it?
No, it's as I said, it's been there once before. It's now a three years in a row activity in Brussels.
So if someone's listening to this, you've got so many shows going on at the moment, but first of all, how many have you got going on, and how many can you physically do? How many is it possible to do? Because you seem to be releasing a new show every other week.
End of the first quarter this year, we basically have said in public, which is, we're up to 40 shows and activities this year. Our personal estimate is 60. I think that our focus has changed in the last 12 months. From when we first started, we were like running around looking at different territories. We're now focusing very much on territories that are economically a good fit for us. And so you're looking at territories such as Japan in the Far East, Germany, Belgium, UK, France, United States. They are all big markets for the brand of Lego. And they are the people who are coming to the shows with their kids. They basically, in crude terms, can afford what our show's all about.
Yeah. So when you started this, David, did you think there'd be this much take-up this fast?
No, not really. I mean, in terms of the live company, we tend to forget we've been around 15 months, and our brand, I think the biggest success, I've harped on about this before, is our brand and how it has gone from one show which was originally called Brick Live now, and how we're in so many different places around the world. And you asked just now, you said, what's the limit? Well, limit being, you know, the countries that we would want to be in, the holiday periods within those countries. And I have to say, probably you're looking at somewhere around about 150. And I see no reason why that should not be something. If you look at what are we in 2019? So if you looked at 2021, I would hope that we would be getting close to that number.
Yeah. And what's the ultimate ambition here, David, with Live Company Group?
Well, the ultimate ambition, obviously, is to do what we're doing now, which is to make money, to build our brand, to create value for the shareholders. Because I think there comes a time when, if in our sector, if you look at an individual show that's promoted, that is worth X. People trade, buy shows from other people for multi-millions on a set PE. We will have a lot of shows. We will have our own brand. We obviously, with the purchase last year of Brightbricks, have our own. We're our own content producer. So I think the ultimate, or the short to medium term, is to build real value around the company. It's all about growth. Mm-hmm. And I think if I looked back to 2017 into the 18, the figures that we're about to publish, every element within the company has shown growth, whether it's revenue, whether it's assets, all of these things have grown, right? And in a relatively short period of time, I think we people forget, you know, being a public company, it comes with a lot of potential, but a lot of burdens with it. And, you know, we've done that within the same period of being, you know, pretty much as alive as a brand. So what is Live Company all about? Definitely creating value for its shareholders.
Yeah. And going forward, do you have sort of plans that maybe the average shareholder wouldn't expect? It's a bit surprising, a bit left field.
Yeah, I think, I guess you were saying, do we have things that you would see as a game-changing something that is like that? Mm-hmm. Yes, we're working on certain elements now. And I think everything about this company is some way or another a partnership. It's a partnership with fellow licensees. It's a partnership with, you know, the content creators. Ultimately, I think the level of partners that we're going to attract would certainly, I would never believe we would have got that when we started. And I think we'll surprise some when they hear what we're going to announce sometime in the future.
Wow. And I suppose that the more successful you get and the bigger you get, that the more opportunities present themselves. Is that the case?
Yes, I think we are now, if I talk to my colleagues, they are surprised by the fact that when you talk about our product, when you talk about something, it's always difficult. You have to go through layers of management in these companies. We're fast tracking through to a decision maker, and people, when they hear what we do, they're really beginning to come to us. So, as I said, it's all about a brand, the success. You've got to remember, why is the guy back from Brussels? Because he made money before, because his audience has asked for it to come back, and therefore he's basically committing to us. So the success of the content is what's driven this project. And the content's changed. I mean, when we first started the company, there were very few assets involved. There were some bricks. Now we've got multiple things going on in these shows. I mean, we're on sale now for the NEC show in the UK, which is in October, which, Justin, I hope you'll come to. Mm-hmm. We're going to launch three new pieces of content, significant pieces of content for that show. And so, you know, this is what it's all about. It's always updating your own content. Your audience expects you to come back with something new, but they want to come back to Brick Live. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's always evolving and always something new. Marvellous stuff. Okay, David, well, for someone listening right now, looks the sound of what you're doing, but are not following the story as yet, given those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Most of the management of this company have shares or options in the business. So it's a management that basically believes in the product. The product, as I've said, is the brand is now a global brand. And the third thing is, if you were to bring, if you're a shareholder with kids, or you've got friends or with kids, if you bring yourself to the show, I think you wouldn't want to leave. That's kind of why I think the shareholders we've got, the retail shareholders we've got, are incredibly loyal to what we're about. And I think that's also a testament to what everybody who works on this project.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. David, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be catching up again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil. David, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for asking, Justin. Morning, everybody.
Yeah, it's been an eventful year for Union Jack. You've made progress on several fronts, and we'll dig into that because you've just released your final results, so summarising the year and what's to come. Before we do, as always, David, you know, I hate to assume everyone knows exactly everything about the company. So for people new to the podcast or maybe not familiar with Union Jack, can you just explain and summarise what Union Jack Oil is all about, please?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to. Union Jack's a small AIM-listed company, market cap about 10 million, so there's still a lot of meat to be added to this company, in my opinion. And what we do, we cherry-pick what we consider to be probably the best onshore projects around and prospects. We've got a great technical team. They vet everything. We take a look, and thankfully, the market has always been very, very kind to us and shareholders. We come across a nice prospect, say we want to take 10, 15, 20, even more percentage of this. And the institutions and shareholders are very pleased to offer us the money, and that oils and wheels for us and enables us to explore. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, take us through what you see as some of your operational highlights this year, David, if you could.
Well, the operational highlights, I think the early part of last year was pretty slow. You know, we had disappointment with Wrestle, and that seems to have sorted itself out now with the appeal happening in November. We had what appeared to be a disappointing result at Fiskerthorpe, but if you go back and read the RNS, it's not, you know, we've got every faith. And if you look at my piece that I actually wrote in the chairman's statement about Fiskerthorpe, you know, there's still a lot, it's still untested, and in my opinion, still one of the biggest prospects in the UK to be tested. So lots of upside there, in my opinion. We're currently drilling West Newton. We're keeping under the radar with that one. You know, we know it's a 40-day well. And we're in about day 15 at the moment, so not long to wait, hopefully. Wrestle, I mentioned that earlier. We've got the appeal being heard, so hopefully this might be our year. Last year was a bit of a curious egg. We had some good, some bad news, but I'm not a glass half-empty guy. I'm looking forward to the future, and I think this year is probably one of the most important in Union Jack's development.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got enough cash to be going on with as well?
Yeah, we're fine. As I mentioned to you, you know, the market's been very, very good to us, even in tough times. Like sometimes these companies, you know, of a similar ilk to us go out and they get whacked with a massive discount, you know, which kills companies. And we've been very lucky. We always seem to get a good reception.
Yeah. Okay. And so, just summarise. So in the final 6 months, what would be the ideal scenario for Union Jack Oil, David?
Oh goodness me, Union. Okay. Now I'm saying this with a very, very, my tongue's poking out of my cheek. Mm-hmm. You're asking me. The ideal would be that at West Newton we hit 189 billion cubic feet of gas. Mm-hmm. Which would be astronomical for us if our 16 and a bit percentage, and then we do a start at Fiskerthorpe, we hit the mother load there, and finally we go and we get the Wrestle Pass and we get into production there. So that would be the ideal year. But the ideal year is really, I suppose you could say, that everybody gets by, no accidents on site, health and safety, all the usual stuff, you know. That's, as long as nobody gets hurt doing these exercises, then great. You know, the success is ancillary, really.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, If you go back, like, say, a year, and as you said you had your issues there with wrestle planning and stuff, I mean, how much more optimistic are you at this point in time now than you were, say, 12 months ago?
Well, in respect of wrestle?
Yeah.
Well, you'd have to be highly optimistic. It was a strange situation last time at the... You know, I don't think I'm saying anything out of school. We were all up there at every hearing, and Graham Bull and myself and Joe, and the council's own independent reviewers took a look at what we put in and said that they believed that planning could be granted with some issues associated. So even their own planning people said, let it happen. And they still turned it down. So I don't know. As you read, we've got a QC lined up to help us this time. And it's a terrible shame that it's taking this long, because it's a really nice project. It will help everybody.
Yeah. It seems like there's a lot of politics at play there.
And as for carbon, you know, obviously the climate change affair is going on. It's really, really at the top of the pile of everybody's news nowadays. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the carbon footprint, we're, 18 miles or kilometres away from Birmingham Refinery. We buy oil from Saudi and all the other producers in the east. Oh, God, what a difference in the carbon footprint. You know, it's a non-starter, really. I find it unbelievable, but there you go. That's the way things are now.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, David, you're the score here. If someone's listening, likes the sound of what you're talking about and the progress you're making here, but are not following the story yet, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, of course. And as I always say, anyone that listens to these podcasts when I'm on, I'm always going to say that this company, as with every exploration company and even production company, it's got risk all over it, and that risk never goes away. Mm-hmm. So as to why people should maybe take a look at us, I believe we're a very transparent company. We always try and do what we say we're going to do, as it says on the tin. I think we've done that, and I'm pretty sure we have. And finally, I think you'll find that we are always batting for shareholders, and the majority would tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. David, good to chat to you as always, and no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
I hope so, for the right reasons. All the best to everybody. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is oil and gas sector specialist Malky. You all right, fella?
I'm very well indeed, thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. What's been happening with these sort of... have you been obviously keeping a close tab on the oil price with this Trump and President Xi and the China and the trade wars? Has it been a bit up and down?
Yeah, I mean, it was in danger of sort of overrunning on the upside at one stage when Brent got up to sort of 75 and so on, which it looked a bit toppy anyway. And then that was the sort of fateful weekend when Trump sort of said he rang up OPEC and spoke to somebody. In fact, you know, he's already done his deal, but he's spoken to the Saudis and the Kuwaitis and the Abu Dhabi and so on about taking up the slack when there's too much crude coming out of when there's less crude coming from Iran. But, you know, actually, to be honest, they don't have much to argue about. They're producing 12.5 million barrels a day as flat to the boards as they can in the USA. So, yeah, it's a slightly odd one to do. But, you know, clearly, although they'd like the price down, because gasoline prices are, you know, by historic standards, pretty high, you know, that's the way it goes. But, you know, oil at the moment, Brent is $71, which is dead right. I mean, you know, I would say that, you know, it's not going to run away on the upside. And as long as OPEC continue to keep their production limits in place with non-OPEC, then it's not going to come down very far. It's quite boring at the moment, to be honest, but it's very good for oil companies because they do their sums at, you know, like $40 and $50. So at $70, you know, almost all the companies that I'm talking about are either who either produce oil mm-hmm. and making a lot of money out of it, or if they're exploring for it, their potential upside is even more substantial.
Yeah. Okay. So what's the news there? What's happening?
Well, I suppose the key bit of news this morning is from Hurricane. Hurricane Energy is, you know, there's a lot going on at Hurricane. We've talked about this before a bit at the moment, but for the people who thought that Hurricane would just go straight to Lancaster, tie up the two wells and start producing at full whack straight away, they've tried to make it perfectly clear that this isn't the way it goes, particularly important when you've got an FPSO sitting there. So what they've announced this morning is introduction of hydrocarbons to the Euka Mizu FPSO, which is probably exactly the way you would want to do it. I think that you know, they're making it absolutely clear here we are that you know, there is you know, we're sitting in there, we've done all the testing we need, we're now going to see each of the two production wells tested. And they'll come on stream and then they'll shut them in, clean and what they call pig the flow lines, and then they'll get all the data that they need from stopping them again, and then they'll, once they've tested everything, they'll simultaneously let the two go, and then once they've got sort of 72 hours, I think they said in the announcement, of non-stop oil, they'll put out an announcement saying first oil is here. And then, of course, for the people who are, you know, who are watching it very carefully, they want to see. I mean, the company have said that they would like to see 6 months of genuine production at decent rates before anyone gets carried away about whether it's going to work or not work. So, you know, the bottom line is that this is extremely good news for Hurricane shareholders, because it's the most, you know, it's the best news we could have had so far, and that they're underway, and there'll be more imminently, I would suggest, when all those wells and the testing has been done.
Yeah,
but well, you mustn't forget that Hurricane Energy is no longer all about just the Lancaster project, which we're talking about here. Because they are drilling a well at the moment in the Warwick, called Warwick Deep, which is the Greater Warwick area, which they're carried by Spirit for, so they're not having to pay for it. But it would potentially massively increase their reserves, the resources and reserves, if these wells were to come in. So, you know, it's a very exciting time for Hurricane shareholders. It ain't all going to happen in one go, but it's very promising.
Yeah, well, you know, the market likes it. It's up just over 5% as we speak. So yeah, it's going in the right direction. And on the chart, there's a little gap up this morning, which is always quite bullish there when it opens up, yeah, you know, like that. Cool. What's next, Malky?
I noticed that last week, Chariot Oil and Gas, which I've been sort of looking at much more closely recently since they've been, they announced a few weeks ago that they'd have been awarded a block called the Lixus block, which is in Morocco. The Lixus block already has a discovery on it called Anchois, but they announced at the time that there were a number of satellites around the discovery, and last week they announced that a new updated CPR had been announced, from Netherland Sewell, who are one of the best in the business, and they added a substantial amount. They've now got total recoverable reserves in excess of 1 TCF of gas, and Anchois North, which is one of these satellites, is potentially got 308 BCF in it, and that's, you know, that's not an exploration well, but it's neither is it an appraisal well. I would say it's 43% chance of geological success, which is pretty good, and gives them potentially upside. Now, you know already that because we've seen it from, you know, five or six other companies, that Morocco is a very exciting place to go, because apart from the fact that Onhim, the state company, welcome internal investment, there's a very favourable fiscal regime, but the gas prices are very high. Morocco is a big demander of gas. SDX would have told you before that they're getting $10, $30, or $11 for gas, which they get out of the ground for less than a dollar. So it's an exciting market to be in, high-priced, high-margin business. So if Chariot can pull this one off, and there's 4p of cash in the Chariot price. Last time I looked at it, it was 5 and a bit. So there's masses of upside. I don't think the market's taken on board this Lexus block or the CPI yet entirely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? I chatted to Larry for the first time on the podcast last week.
All right.
Yeah, really nice guy, knows his stuff, and a genuine down-to-earth fella, you know, and you feel like he's got it going there. And it does seem a little under the radar, Chariot, you know, at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, historically, they've always gone for sort of what might be called elephants in the industry, because they did the Namibia well, the Morocco offshore well, and, you know, although they had good carries and they didn't, you know, the risk for them was mainly on the upside, but this is just balancing the risk in Chariot a bit, and it's nothing wrong with that at all, and it looks exciting to me.
Marvellous stuff. C-H-A-R, Chariot. What's next, Malky?
Quick word, you might have seen a company called Jadestone has been sort of appearing on the site screens a bit. Jadestone is recently quoted in London, but is mainly operational in Australia and Asia. They just announced that they've signed a heads of agreement for their Gasells agreement with Petro Vietnam. They've got this Nam Du gas development, which when up and running will be producing 80 million scf of gas a day. They'll get a very good price for this in that neck of the woods, you know, maybe back to what we're talking about, Morocco, maybe $8, something like that, $8 or $9 perhaps. And so that's very good. And they've announced this morning that there's an infill drilling on a thing called Stag, which is now completed. The well is going off the license, and they'll be producing that soon. So JSE, Jadestone Energy. I met the management for the first time when they were last over, and they were extremely impressive. I'm hoping to meet them again. I think they're over next week, and I'm hoping to meet them again. But Jadestone looks quite exciting to me.
Okay, cool. JSE, yeah, Jadestone. Marlis, what's next, Malky?
Couple of others with results and details since we last spoke. Victoria Oil and Gas, you know, we get into, you know, I've got into more trouble on Victoria Oil and Gas than almost any other company in the last 3 or 4 years, because they have been all over the place. They were doing very well, and then they lost their 53% customer a year and a bit ago. And the good thing was that they signed that back up again at the end of last year. And the resumption of the ENEO contract has meant that production in the results they announced last week is up to 127% at 10.1 million scf a day, of which 5 and a bit million is ENEO. They've also signed up 2 new customers for thermal and power generation. And we know there is massive demand in country. And therefore, the ENEO and their customers will be needing more gas. They did a fundraise. The management changed. Kevin Fu left the board, and 2 new non-execs have come on the board. Roger Kennedy is now executive chairman, and they've cut the costs to the bone, which is also good news. Now, there was a real hiccup in those figures last week, and there was some concern that the ENEO had not yet paid for any of the gas they've taken this year. I spoke to Ahmed Dick, who's the CEO, and said, you know, should the market be worrying about this? Because, you know, you've got to tell us if this is the case. Now, the point is that they have only been invoiced for January, February and March, so it's a quarter behind. Now, you know, obviously, no one likes to be 90 days behind, but actually, you know, in the oil industry, it's not that bad. I mean, I think Schlumberger and Halliburton certainly, you know, are 90 days, if not more, behind. So I don't think it's the end of the world. And when you look at what VAG have got here, they've got a good relationship with the new CEO of ENEO. I think they will, you know, they made it perfectly clear to ENEO that they should be paying this month. So I'm expecting a payment this month and regular payments after that. Mm-hmm. I can understand why people are concerned about it, because they've disappointed in the past, but I think that things have changed a bit at VAG. and there's been a sort of clean sweep of a lot of people and a lot of costs. So while I can understand people being concerned, and the message boards were full of people saying that it's the same old story, I think at the moment VOG is undervalued.
Yeah, well, at the moment, I mean, is this, there's no recovery in the chart, it looks like. It's hit a low, but I say it's bouncing off. Well, hang on, it's hit a new low sort of today, so 12.50 pretty much, so it's a bit worrying on that front. But
I think you've got to try and work out, if the people are right that's saying that they're not going to get paid for this gas, then you can write it off and that'll be the end of it. They've wasted their time changing the management, getting a good guy as executive chairman, two new non-executive directors, and everything else. But there is a significant demand for gas in country, and they are the only suppliers of it. If they eventually decided to pull the plug and just sell to their industrial clients, which I couldn't blame them for, they'll be a smaller business. But I think that ENA will pay. And, you know, sometimes you have to take a view on these things when the shares are too cheap. And I'll take a view on that. If I get it wrong, you know, these things happen. But
Yeah, okay, cool. VOG, yeah, check it out. Maybe that's it. Well, like I said, when Pete, time to buy, if you've done your research and you know all about it, is when people are looking the other way and are a bit worried about it and selling, you know? So,
yeah.
There we are. Anything else, Malky?
Just finally, I wanted to mention Rockrose Energy. They had results since the last time you and I have spoken. I spoke to Andrew Austin the other day. You know, things are going very well at Rockrose. I mean, this is a pro forma set of figures because it includes they're continually making acquisitions of assets, normally in the North Sea and the UKCS. So this is a pro forma set of figures, including the acquisition of Dias, the Dutch company, but also the company, the stock is suspended at the moment because they've announced that they're taking over Marathon Oil UK assets. This company is doing incredibly well. They're buying well. Everything they seem to do is they've got plenty of cash, which they're using wisely. Decommissioning liabilities, which people are worried about, aren't too... they're extending the data on that one, and it's the life of the assets, and therefore the decommissioning liability is increasing, and their costs are falling as they do that. If you bear in mind that the last production was 6,400 barrels a day, that goes up to 10,700 barrels a day with the Dias, and will double again with the Marathon when it's completed later on in the year. You also got to bear in mind, Justin, that this company paid out 150p cash special dividend last year and bought back $22 million worth of shares in a buyback at 560p. So they are incredibly strong financially. Mm-hmm. They look very cheap, and the management are on top of the acquisitions all the time. So people worry about the fact that they're decommissioning liabilities. I think they're in one-off position on that. A good deal of the cash in the balance sheet is kept specifically and ring-fenced for that. So I think that Rockrose, when it comes back, obviously we don't know what it's going to come back at, but it should have a load more friends.
I know a lot of people are big fans of it on social media. So interesting there. RRE is ticker there. Marvellous. Anything else, Malky? Was that it?
That's all from me. The people who watch the Americas will be interested in the fact that it's Occidental who are likely to win the battle for Anadarko now, because Chevron walked away at the end of last week. They took $1 billion check with them for their troubles because that wallet warmer was signed up when Occidental and got together and put $38 billion on the table. Occidental are selling the African assets to Total for $8 billion, but they've still got a big bill, and they've had to go to the sage of Omaha to get a convertible to pay for it. So yeah. I think Chevron have done quite a smart deal here.
Yeah, exactly. Marlon, when you got Warren Buffett fighting your corner, you know, as an opposition, you may as well think, well, hang on. He may as well step down in a sec here. There's no point fighting with the...
Yeah, and he's getting a huge price on his convertible. So
yeah.
he wins either way because he's getting, I think it's like 8.5% on a convertible to an oil company for this. And, you know, if anyone's in trouble, it's Occidental.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff. Malky, cheers for that, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Way Education, W-E-Y. I do hold a bit of stock in Way. They've been lacking news of late, but the interims are out half decent. They were valued this morning, or before the rise today. They've risen like 40-odd percent. But they were valued this morning at 7 million. And 5 million in cash, and they're not losing money, you know, online education. So it's an improving business. It's been restructured to focus on core areas. And part of me thinking, shall I hold or shall I? Because I was down quite a bit, but now I'm back to break even pretty much after that big bounce. They're massively oversold and no news. But I think, you know, it's in review, but I think it's a decent business improving. So I think I'm going to hold. And see what happens here. I mean, they're not going to need any cash. That's the thing, you know. So I'm going to hold for a while. See, because the growth is very good. Revenue up 54% on last year. So there's growth there. There's cash there. There's a growing market in online education. There's some skin in the game from the directors. I quite like it. Okay, at four, Metro Bank. Down 4% again. It's lost about 80% of its value since January. At three, Wide Sales Group, WDC, up 5% as I talk. At two, Argo Mining, that's up 43%. Don't know what's happened there, but I'll check it out, Argo Mining. ARB is ticker there. And number one most followed company is Integumin, and I did a video on that last night, talking about how they've transferred the model, or Jerry, Brandon came to the podcast, and he's transferred the model from basically selling test kits for $2,000 a pop. This is human skin, lab skin, to selling a data or AI data and analytics service to run about $200,000 per pop. So he's transforming that business there. That's skin to get and take him in. Okay, top five most liked RNSs came from the following companies. At five, Ascent Resources, AST, final results. At four, Horizontal Minerals, AGM presentation available online. At three, Jangada Mine, social, legal, and environmental review completed. At two, Hurricane Energy, operational update. And number one, most followed company, or most liked RNS, I should say, came from Europa Metals, rig mobilized to site. And that's the Toral project, of course, in Spain. Hopefully, we'll get some Lawrence on that soon. That's EUZ ticker. That's it for the podcast. Don't forget, if you could, give us a review if you use the app. It's obviously it's free to use. If you get some value from that, then please drop us a decent review on the Apple or Android stores. Thanks very much. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.